We all deserve some yay in our day. So say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that add wonder to your routine, like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. It's called Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, works brilliantly, and it's fun. So it's pretty much magic. And for the adults, Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste, which is just as good without the unicorns. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.
Hey there, it's JVL on The Secret Show with Sarah Longwell today. We talked about Christine Noem's ongoing train wreck. It's actually gotten worse since she talked about killing the puppy. And then we talked about the stuff that's been going down in Donald Trump's first criminal trial, which is wild. You never take notes on a criminal effing conspiracy. Here's the show. So you probably thought that Christine Noem had been through the worst of it. With the look at how tough I am because I murdered my dog.
Yeah.
Not quite.
No? What else is there?
New story. An independent paper in Dakota, the Dakota Scout, has been going through her book, and she also claims that she met with Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea.
Like as a positive? Because she meets with world...
Let me read to you the passage.
Okay.
She says she met with him when she was a member of the House Armed Services Committee. Through my tenure on the House Armed Services Committee, I had the chance to travel to many countries to meet with world leaders. I remember when I met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un.
I'm sure she called him a dictator.
I'm sure he underestimated me, having no clue about my experience staring down little tyrants. I'd been a children's pastor, after all. Dealing with foreign leaders takes resolve, preparation, and determination. My experiences on those many foreign trips made me a better member of Congress and a stronger governor. It allowed me to hone my deal-making skills, which play a crucial role in leadership. So here she is, staring down Kim Jong-un and making good decisions and negotiating deals. And when asked by the scout, the reporters from the scout, did this happen? Because it seems impossible. She says that she met with him in 2014. Kim Jong-un did not leave the country for the first time until 2018. He didn't leave North Korea until 2018.
Did she go to North Korea?
There are no records of any meetings in any way. And when asked by it, the quote from Noem's office is, she does not discuss her meetings with foreign leaders.
Oh.
So it isn't just that she says, I met with Kim Jong-un, and she's wrong about that, because that's a thing that you shouldn't be wrong about, right? It's not
When you say you're wrong, that's not like oops, who are you confusing that meeting
like saying,
with?
I met with the city planning commissioner of Springfield, Ohio, but it was actually the city planning commissioner of Springfield, Indiana. Right? That you'd be like, okay, well, you know, like this is a major world figure, one of the last true dictators on the planet, of a nuclear power, really bad guy, kind of a big deal. And she's like, not only did I meet him, he underestimated me. Mm. And I stared him down and learned how to negotiate deals from the way I dealt with him. Yeehaw!
VP auditions
not going
have
so well.
Been going poorly for folks. It seems to be blowing up a lot of people on the launch pad.
There's one more.
Okay.
She also says that she canceled a meeting with the president of France, Emmanuel Macron.
What is that?
So she says that she was in in France. And I'm trying to find the exact, and she says she was scheduled to meet with him, but then he said some very pro Hamas things.
Macron did.
And so she canceled her meeting with him because she doesn't take that sort of bullshit. Because she's tough and she learned from staring down Kim Jong-un. She learned how to deal with guys like Macron. There is no record of her being scheduled to meet Macron. And the closest thing that the reporters, the scout, can figure out from trying to reconstruct travel schedules and itineraries and stuff is that she might have been scheduled to attend a conference at which Macron was going to speak at some point. And she has turned her, "I skipped going to this conference," into, "Oh, I showed him the back of my hand. He can take that pro Hamas content elsewhere. Mr. Froggy Frog, I'm not going to stand for that. I'm a tough old gal." Between this, the dentistry stuff, the insane plastic surgery, I'm at the point
where Corey Lewandowski,
I don't even understand how she got elected governor of which Dakota is it?
South,
yes. Yeah. Which is, I guess, the civilized one.
Well, I don't know. Isn't Burgum North Dakota?
North Dakota, yeah. Burgum is the real wilderness Dakota.
Do you know what he's Bill's VP? Like, he thinks that it's going to be Burgum?
Yeah, could be. I have a good friend from South Dakota, and the way that he used to look down his nose at North Dakota was basically the way people from Williamsburg's, the Williamsburg section in Brooklyn would look down at Jersey. Like, that's how North Dakota. So tell me what you think about Kristi Noem. How does something like this happen?
Well, there's a couple things that are interesting to me about how she's trying to frame herself as tough to the point of clearly lying about the dictators and, it sounds like, telling the truth about shooting the dog. You know, I'm just going to go back to the focus groups. You know, Nikki Haley allowed during this primary cycle for us to ask a lot of these Republican voters about voting for a woman. And I was genuinely surprised by how many people said that they didn't think women were tough enough, especially to deal with world leaders. And sometimes people said like very stupid things like, you know, what if she's on her period? How can you trust her with the nuclear codes? That was a guy. But for the most part, it was like lots of women said this, is that they were just worried about them being tough enough or world leaders taking them seriously. And so it feels like this is a thing that they know about their own voters, that Noem knows. And it feels like this was obviously constructed to kind of lean into this, that, no, I am tough. No, I meet with world leaders fear me. So it seems like she's trying to, they understand their own voters and the liability that having a female anatomy comes, what it presents for women who want
ovaries,
to be leaders in the party. Ovaries, that's right.
Big problem.
So that's what I think is happening here.
Doesn't this kind of prove their point, though? I guess. I mean, that she thinks the way to get tough is to, like, do this sort of thing? Like, that's what people who aren't actually tough would do.
So I think that's true. But, like, Trump...
Maybe she was on her period when she wrote this book.
Maybe. Oh,
come on. That's good. Nothing. I don't get any laugh for that.
I don't know. Objectively, possibly. I don't know.
She didn't like this book, Sarah.
Okay.
She just, like, gave an interview to a ghost. Don't worry. Okay.
Okay, well, I don't know. I'm not going to get into the period. Like, that's not the point. The point is...
It's just a joke.
I get it. You know what? I've been on the road for multiple days now, including our live show in Philly. And I'm on fumes right now. I just just got back. So your jokes are going to have to be funnier to really get in there.
I got a mute. I'm going to start coughing. All right.
Okay, come back.
Go ahead.
What were we talking about? You always do this. I Christine can never Ohm. Remember.
About so you think this is just her butching up and I mean, it's not going to work.
Oh, this is the thing. So I think that's transparently obviously what she's doing. I will say she has been coming up for years as a VP option or when you asked people. So if it's not Trump, who would you like? She is often somebody that comes up. And so it doesn't surprise me that she thinks she's, a real option for Trump. But I just don't think she is anymore. This is what I was going to say on the toughness thing. Donald Trump has a gold toilet and wears makeup. And it is so weird that the tough thing, he's never had a callus on his hand. He dodged the draft because of bone spurs. Like, this is on the right, there's a really dysfunctional view of strength to begin with. And so it doesn't sort of surprise me that her read on this was like performative,
toxicity.
Silly. Yeah, well, toxic
they view
strength
toxicity
coding.
As strength,
right?
This is doing bad things means you're strong. Because I guess it means you're strong enough to say, I don't have to be a good person the way everybody else says you do.
Right.
That's how the right tends to code strength right now. It's a weird
ass thing.
Take
your rules about
isn't
shooting
it?
Dogs in the face and shove them, guys.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
I don't think it was always like this. Maybe it was.
I don't know, but at least when the Romney stuff happened with the dog, that was Oppo on him. People knew it would make him look bad. She did this to herself.
Romney isn't right about it.
Some of this stuff is just it's just incompetence too, right? She took on.
She's Veep.
The weird
she's the Julia
teeth
Louis
stuff.
Dreyfus
why?
From Veep, right?
Yeah. She doesn't have. She's like this. She's bad at this. And she this is where. And look, I think Katie Britt, who is not an unserious person, actually, she was always the person I thought. She too did a performative, thing that wasn't her to try to demonstrate, in her mind, what was like. Psycho kitchen lady. That's not who she is, but that's what she thought was demanded of her, both by Trump. I don't think so. I don't think so. You know who
we'll
her
see.
Best friend
Maybe.
Is in the Senate?
John.
You know
Fetterman.
Who she's best friends with? Yeah.
John Fetterman. That's right.
No, I think
Big
she's
John
a pretty
normal awesome. Big John
normal
is everyone's
person.
Best friend.
Okay. he came out against lab-grown meat, too. Have you been this lab-grown meat thing to me is a really funny new it's another weird horseshoe.
But are we against lab-grown meat?
I'm not. I don't know. I haven't tasted it. Is it good?
I mean, all I know is that I'm a sci-fi nerd, and in every science fiction version of the future, everybody does lab-grown meat because otherwise you can't have protein as a spacefaring species. And so once people are no longer on Earth and they're living in... Never mind. You're just going to laugh at me. I'm going to stop talking about my science fiction stuff.
When they're all just living in pods and they can't raise pigs and chickens.
They don't have, you can't have chickens on a faster than light spaceship. There just isn't space.
Mm-hmm.
Here's something I wanted us to talk about during the show.
Yeah.
But we didn't have time.
During our show in Philly?
Yeah.
It was such a good show.
It was a great
I know
show.
We're all over the place right now, but it was an awesome show. The people of Philly are the best. We had midnight cheesesteaks. It was great.
So Kristi Noem is a product of COVID. She became super prominent during COVID because she was a get your damn masks out of here. We're going to have our big Sturgis bike rally, and I don't care how many people have to die afterwards to do it. And, I'm going to look at me. And she was doing commercials where she was driving around in a pickup with a shotgun, I think. I have a thesis that I wanted to try out on you, which is that COVID surfaced in the Republican Party. And I'm only talking about elected people. the elected politicians who became prominent Republicans because of COVID tended to be the worst parts of the Republican Party. It was people like DeSantis. It was people like Kristi Noem. These are not people who are very good at politicians, and they are people who actually are not really, they're really unaligned with America. Whereas on the Democratic side, COVID tended to surface politicians who are actually better. Not all of them. Andrew Cuomo would be the big exception in this. But like Gretchen Whitmer, Raphael Warnock, John Fetterman, the Democrats who got elected during COVID tended to be pretty good as politicians. Josh Shapiro is another one. We saw Shapiro, right? And I find that interesting. And I'm sure it says something. I haven't like really tried to dig down to figure out what it says. But it says something about Republican voter preferences. That when confronted with the pandemic, Republican voters wanted something out of their politicians that was much more performative and outside of the mainstream than normal. And Democrats suddenly wanted the opposite of that. Democrats suddenly wanted mainstream competence and not performative. They were willing to like, oh, we don't want to take a chance on someone who is just a liberal hero. Thoughts?
I just don't agree with this. You could kind of get me on the first part with Republicans that COVID and people bucking the trend of we're going to close everything, right? Like the Republicans who came out of COVID better off than they went in were people like DeSantis, who opened things up earlier than most people were saying. Kemp in Georgia, who kept a lot of things open. You're right, Kristi Noem. Like there was a lot of, and I think that there's different types of these people. I think there's the people who were really performative about it with the no masking and against the elite, you know, cabal of doctors and scientists who say these things and who went anti-vax, versus people who just said, I think we're going overboard here. And like in my state, we're going to leave things open, which is closer to, I think, DeSantis and Kemp. DeSantis was more performative, but anyway, so I can sort of agree with that, that COVID helped elevate stars in the Republican Party
and who operated like Mike a certain DeWine, way. Who was very careful and very good. I mean, Mike DeWine was a very responsible governor, and he seems to basically that put the end of the Mike DeWine moment in Ohio.
Yeah, although he got reelected, and he got reelected because the majority of the state, including a lot of Democrats, liked Mike DeWine just fine and thought he was responsible, actor during COVID. Whereas I think that the Democrats who have become like their bench that has formed, I think has almost nothing to do with COVID specifically, and has a lot more to do with the reaction to Donald Trump, and where Democrats have said, you know what? This is we don't get to get. I think there's a couple things going on. I was going to say, but I don't think this is entirely true. So let me work it out. I was going to say that they basically nominated people who were more palatable, that sort of center-right folks could vote for. Like the reason that Shapiro wins by 14 points is that he ran against Doug Mastriano, who was an absolute lunatic. Like,
yes.
Racist, anti-Semitic, crazy dude. And people were like, yeah, no thanks, this other guy seems normal. And Gretchen Whitmer, because like Gretchen Whitmer didn't do great during COVID. People were mad at her about COVID because she, in like a Newsom-ish type, one of the things she did, and I heard this, focus groups would talk about it all the time, she like went and visited her dad. Her dad was sick, but like they couldn't. Like she was able to do things that they weren't, and became something of a scandal in the state, right? Where these politics, and so I don't think it did a ton for her. I do think Gretchen Whitmer has become somebody who people look at as a national figure in large part because She just won re-election by 10 points over Tudor Dixon. She's done a lot of work on the roads, which is what people in Michigan seem to really have wanted out of her. And so I think there's people like Jared Polis for whom COVID helped because he was much more moderate than your average Democrat on it. He got special points from people for sort of being good on COVID. I don't, Warnock's a senator. I don't know how he did on COVID.
Yeah, that probably doesn't really.
So anyway, I think that the good, I think that the bench of broadly appealing candidates has come more from the, more as a response to Trump than something and related COVID. Okay, so that's my one thing. The other thing that I'll say that's interesting to me is I think there's something that's happened on the Democratic side where it used to be a, like the difference between progressives and sort of moderate Democrats is often moderate Democrats were either slightly more pro-life than your average Democrat or slightly less pro-LGBT or some of the sort of social issues that are divisive. But you can now be a perfectly moderate Democratic governor and be super affirmative LGBT and super pro-choice. And like that doesn't make you super progressive. Right. And what makes you progress, what makes you moderate is almost is a little bit temperamental. Some of the way you deal with the Republicans in your space, in your state. And, also I think being a bit of sort of economically being sort of more pro business, more pro cop almost like if you are a Democrat who like, here's Shapiro. Why do people think Shapiro is like a moderate? When the wokesters in his state came for William Penn, right? Because he was, I don't remember why, but it was like, we're going to remove this statue. He was like, no, we're not. That's not a thing that's happening. Everyone stop that. Like, that's the kind of temperamental moderation that I think people respond to. So anyway, I'm going to push back on the idea that COVID had that much to do with it.
All right. I will definitely buy that. I think you convinced me. Oh. But on the Republican side, I think COVID... probably
I think you're right about it making stars
crowd out guys like Mike DeWine and instead made stars out of people who are bad.
But that and that but that's almost like COVID is a thing, but it is a symptom of the broader desire in this party now to buck elites. Like it just it was like an instance that allowed them to do a lot of the things that is defining the party now. Right. And also say like to define the left as socialists who want to lock you up, who are shutting down businesses, who are making you wear a mask, who want to control you. Right. It gave them a way to kind of bring the whole like and like not keeping schools open and all that stuff. Plus, like the thing that people is like Black Lives Matter that happened like in COVID. And one of the things that really sticks with people that I still hear them bring up is the idea that, like, we were masked. No one was in school. Like, people were in school. But, like, these protests were happening. And, like, the scientific community was like, we support this. Now, at the time, we didn't really know this at the time. But I think if people had been like, yes, outside, like, everything that happens outside is fine, then I don't know. I think just coming to that, because I remember seeing the crowds of people, and so we were like, all like, oh my gosh, they're so close to each other. That's not how we're doing things right now.
No, I wasn't getting in any of those crowds. No, but this is, I mean, there were, this is what sort of bothers me. It wasn't the left, which like shut everything down, right? Because the left doesn't have power. And the president of the United States was a Republican, was Donald Trump, who didn't even believe that COVID was real. And also, people don't understand, these decisions are largely made at very, very close to the ground local levels. And so, you know, there's a park in San Diego. I remember this. Tom Brady got kicked out of a park in San Diego, I think it was. Do you remember this? Who's
Tom Brady? Just kidding.
He was out like doing yoga in a park. He was the only human being, and like some cop came up and was like, "You got to get out of here. The park's closed because of COVID." Right? There were like weird decisions made by civic bureaucrats. Whether in your town, I remember in my little town of Virginia, like there was police caution tape around like one of the kids' playgrounds. It was like it's closed because of COVID. Those things were silly. And they were silly at the time. But also, like, you know, when you have a once in a century pandemic, some of the responses are going to be silly. Like, that's, you know, not every response is going to be perfectly right because people don't understand what they're dealing with and they're working through it. But I was, you know, I thought the protests were not a super great idea. You know, it's one thing to, like, protest in a loose group, but, like, the way people were packed in Lafayette Square, I wouldn't have been there.
Yeah, but they weren't super spreaders because they were outside.
Not super spreaders. They weren't good. They weren't good. I wouldn't have been there.
Okay, well, that's fine, Lib.
Whatever. Okay. Nobody talks about this, but we are on week three. We just wrapped up week three of the Trump trial in Manhattan. And I have not followed this as closely on the day-to-day level as I should be. And I started playing catch up over the last 48 hours and going back and reading over what's been going on. And I know that we all stipulate that this is the weakest of the four cases and it seems to me like the prosecution is doing a very good job, that there is a tremendous amount of evidence and that it is all incredibly damning. Just as a yesterday, Keith Davidson, who is the lawyer for Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels, texted Dylan Howard, the then editor of the National Enquirer, on election night. The text was, "What have we done?" On election night, when asked on the stand to explain what he meant, he said that his intention, his meaning of the text, was that our activities may have in some way assisted the presidential campaign of Donald Trump, which is the whole ballgame, right? The idea is that you have to prove state of mind. And without being inside somebody's head, you can't prove definitively their state of mind. But if everybody around Trump understood that this thing that Trump had directed and initiated was designed to help his campaign, it is going to be very hard for Trump to say, no, I was just paying him off to avoid embarrassment. I had no idea. I didn't realize it was going to touch the campaign. And there's a lot of that stuff going on. Another one, Dylan Howard, the guy who was the, the Dylan Howard, texted his family saying, at least if he wins, he being Trump, I'll be pardoned for electoral fraud. So here's the guy who's editing the National Enquirer who is saying in text that this thing I'm doing is electoral fraud.
Let me ask you something. That
did
goes
you watch
to the
state- Wire?
I did.
Do you remember the scene where they've, like, rented a conference room at the Marriott and, like, there's one of the young kids there taking notes and I think it's, is it Stringer Bell? Is that his character? And he comes over, he's like, are you taking notes? You don't take notes on a criminal fucking conspiracy, right? You don't, if you are doing electoral fraud, you do not text somebody and say, well, at least we'll get pardoned for doing electoral fraud. Hey again. It's JVL. The conversation goes on from there. If you want to hear the rest of the show, head on over to Bulwark Plus and subscribe. Love to have you.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check. Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. It happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.